Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to Polito Talk with Beer, with your host, Tim Beer. This episode is a special one brought to you because on this, I have the honor of being joined by congressional candidate Jason Call for Washington State's 2nd Congressional District. Jason, thank you for joining today. It is an honor. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you? Thank you.
I'm good. Family's good. New York City's starting to open up now. So
Yeah, same in my area.
we have to see how that goes. Better safe than sorry, too. So to start off with today's interview, tell us a little about yourself. Like, what do you do?
Well, I was a high school math teacher for 18 years. That was my first career, and I'm not teaching right now. I'm working as a field rep for an insurance company. I've been an activist my entire life since I was 19 years old, and we invaded Iraq the first time over the Kuwait issues with Saddam Hussein in 1990. I got out in the streets and protested, I was just commenting because I was down in Seattle at the East Precinct protests last night on Capitol Hill. I left before things got violent with the police. I know that the police flash grenaded and tear gassed people again in Seattle. That's the word that I'm getting around 1 o'clock in the morning. I was reminded about where I got my start in activism with protesting at the Federal Building in Seattle 30 years ago. There's a lot of stuff that we've got to petition our government for. And right now, Black Lives Matter and addressing police brutality is just the top issue.
Right. So you're the only primary opponent facing the incoming Congressman Rick Larsen, who's held that seat since 2001. So by the time this term is over, it's going to be 20 years. That's
Yes.
longer than I've been around. So what motivated you to run against him?
Well, I want to correct something slightly. There are six Republicans filed in this race also. Now, we are a heavily Democratic district. We're called the D plus 10 district, which means a Democrat is pretty much going to win this district. But I am the only Democrat challenger to the incumbent. So he is a corporate Democrat. I am a progressive Democrat. For people like myself, we have not been happy with his term in office. He was elected when Bill Clinton was still in the presidency, and
Right.
he has voted conservatively on many issues. He supported the 2005 Bankruptcy Reform Act, which is where I first started essentially challenging him as a constituent. He's voted for things like keeping the or repealing the estate tax. He's voted to loosen banking regulations that were imposed after Dodd-Frank that allowed the banking industry to get away with all sorts of shenanigans. He's just a very conservative corporate Democrat. He takes 75% of his funding from corporate sources. And progressives in the area have been challenging him and other conservative Democrats in the area for a long time, this guy for 15 years. And there have been some challenges to him from the left over the past 10 years, but none of them have really been credible. And because of my work with the Bernie campaign as a volunteer for Bernie over the last 5 years, and getting myself being a leader in that movement locally and getting people engaged with the Democratic Party locally, I have gained some notoriety and some prominence as a progressive leader in the area. And I was asked to do this a year ago by somebody who was themselves a local party chair with the Democratic Party, very left leaning. And I
Right, and
said,
you also got an endorsement from Our Revolution, which is a big
yep,
endorsement too. So that's a good thing
we've
for
got
your
Our
campaign.
Revolution. Our local Sunrise has endorsed us. Our local DSA has endorsed us. We are seeking national endorsement from Sunrise and DSA. And I've had a number of local Democratic Party endorse us also. The Washington State Democrats Progressive Caucus has endorsed us. Our primary is August 4th. And the way I believe things are going to happen is that it will be, since Washington State is just like California, a top two primary, which means the top two vote getters will be facing each other in the general. So it could be two Democrats, two Republicans, or a split. But in this case, because we are a heavily Democratic district, the progressive base that I have built up. I believe that the incumbent and I will be facing each other in the general. I think the Republicans are, none of them are credible. They're all, you know, loony. Some of them are even down at the Olympia State House protesting the lockdown and thinking that the coronavirus is a hoax.
Right.
That's the kind of Republican opposition we have right now. But they're going to fight it out for that, you know, 30 or 35% of the Republican vote in this district. And I 99% believe that it will be the incumbent and I on the general election ballot for November.
All right. So, and Washington is a safe blue state. It's safe to consider that. You know, you have Jay Inslee as the governor, two Democratic senators. It voted towards Hillary Clinton's favor in 2016. So I wanted to ask you, this year is extremely different when running a campaign because of COVID-19. You can't host rallies, town halls, or community events. It all has to be done digitally. And then voting by mail is a big thing now. So how has your campaign assimilated to this shift?
Well, we have a great volunteer base. We've got a really solid website, you know, volunteer signups on our website, donations on the website, issues all listed on the website. We've had a lot of people. We've had well over 100 people reach out to us, want to help with text banking, phone banking, putting up signs. You know, we've got signs all over the district. We did a big sign order, all union printed, of course. And so we've got our signs going up all over the district. And we are gaining that kind of notoriety. And really what it's going to come down to, because a lot of people don't pay attention to those things, and they don't pay attention until it gets right down to they've got their ballot in their hand or they've got their voter guide in their hand. And we have a solidly progressive voter guide statement that will contrast our campaign with the incumbent in no uncertain terms. And that, I believe, is what people are going to be looking for. So August 4th is our primary, and we are mailing ballots. And I think our messaging is really speaking to what people in this district want. We are a Green New Deal district, and we are a Medicare for All district, and the incumbent does not support either of those things.
Right.
He's trying to rebrand himself as a grassroots environmentalist, but he is, in no uncertain terms, he is in the pockets of the polluters, military industrial complex, fossil fuel industry, transportation industry. You know, that's not what the voters of this district want. And so I think us being a top two puts us in a much better position than most of the country where people are seeking for the top Democrat versus the top Republican.
Right.
In those cases, you're seeing progressives get pushed out because people are afraid because of Trump and because of a Republican-controlled Senate. They don't want to lose the House to the Republicans, which is completely understandable.
Right.
But they are afraid of voting for progressives because the message that the establishment Democrats put out there is a message of fear. It's not one of solid policy. So I think we're at a very good advantage here in Washington State for getting a progressive elected to Congress.
Right. To speak to that point, too, a recent U.S. political poll showed that 60% of Joe Biden's voters aren't voting for him out of favorability, but out of the notion to remove Trump. So that definitely is there to fear the blue vote blue, no matter who Donald Trump has to go. Mindset is there. But while you brought up Medicare for All, so I wanted to ask, Congressman Larson opposes the repeal of Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and he's also received over $143,000 from different healthcare companies and PACs. You, on the other hand, support and fight for Medicare for All. It's a big policy in demand. Could you contrast the two and tell us why you'd rather invoke Medicare for All instead of build up on Obamacare?
Well, the bottom line, there are two bottom lines. One is that the ACA does not do enough for enough people. When we are faced with tens of millions of people still, and the most vulnerable above us, you know, these are not people who have great employment. Obviously, they don't have their own employer health care. These are struggling people, and they are left out of the system and unable to access any kind of health care. And for those who are on, now I've been on Obamacare myself, and I can tell you it's expensive. The coverage is not good. And I chose while I was on it not to see a doctor because I really could not consider, you know, having to pay what I would have to pay out of pocket to even use that. And that's where millions, you know, we're talking probably close to 100 million people are in a position of not having healthcare or not having affordable healthcare. And so I can't support that in good conscience. And I don't think any Democrats should support that in good conscience.
Right.
So the other thing is, you know, the ACA is a giveaway to insurance companies. I firmly believe that we need to eliminate the private health insurance system, period. Government health insurance is more affordable. It covers everybody. It covers everybody better than even most employer-based healthcare. So why are we putting all of that money in the pockets of CEOs and shareholders when that money should be going to pay doctors, nurses, support staff, and going to the care that patients need? So that is my bottom line right there. Medicare, if people talk about healthcare being a human right, then Medicare for all is the only answer.
Right. So also like two more policy points to compare and contrast you and Congressman Larson. He has a neutral, if you will, position on decreasing the U.S. defense budget. He hasn't clearly supported nor opposed the notion. What would your position be on that?
Oh, well, I've said many times we spend far too much money on the military. Our military presence around the world does not do us or other people any good. We're at a point where, you know, global cooperation is required and that we should be giving more power to the United Nations to deal with peacekeeping efforts and being a part of those collaborative efforts rather than having our own, you know, some 800 bases around the world. You know, so I definitely, and the military is hugely wasteful in terms of spending. A lot of that money goes to weapons contractors, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, General Dynamics, et cetera. And so those military contracts, those are the companies that are essentially buying our congresspersons. The incumbent that I'm facing sits on the Armed Services Committee, has for his entire career, and he's, in my opinion, firmly in the pockets of the military-industrial complex. And so while he may not have spoken against defunding the military, he's certainly not for it. So I am, you know, I think cutting the military budget in half is a good start. The military should not be a jobs program. And also within the military, we need to make sure that military service people are paid better right. And that there are a number of things with military service that we need to tighten up, like, you know, mental health services and increasing, you know, the vigilance on incidences of sexual assault, which is rampant in the military, you know, 4 to 5 times higher than in the general population. So, we're clearly different on those issues. And I'll say again, the military should not be a jobs program. People should not be looking at the military service to say, this is a way for me to pay to go to college. Right. I'm just firmly opposed to that.
And he also hasn't supported nor opposed. So again, he's neutral on a popular policy that's being pushed for now, which is the federal legalization of marijuana, as well as the expungement of records for those charged with the possession of it. Where do you stand on that issue?
Absolutely support and have for a long time, as somebody who is both a medical and recreational user of cannabis and have been since I was a teenager. It hasn't done me any harm. It was not a gateway drug for me. You know, but the reality is it is medicine for a lot of people. I will say for myself, as somewhat of an insomniac, it helps me go to sleep. It helps me relax. Right. It's certainly far less dangerous than alcohol. But here in Washington State, we were the first state along with Colorado to legalize marijuana at the state level. And I was a volunteer. I was one of the top signature gatherers in the state as a volunteer for getting signatures for I-502 to get that ballot initiative passed. I am 100% in favor of decriminalizing, not just legalizing, but decriminalizing marijuana and expunging all of those records for nonviolent offenses And I'll go even a step farther and say that we need to make reparations to all of the lives that have been ruined by these, you know, criminal, racist drug laws that have very much targeted minority communities.
Right. I definitely agree with that. So while we are on that social racial disparity here, are there any social disparities in your own district that you'd want to address and combat?
We have an opioid crisis here. You know, like much of the country, we need to tackle making sure people have the health services, not have that treated as a criminal issue, but a health issue. And we have homeless issues in our district. And, you know, Seattle has a large homeless population. I'm about 40 miles north of Seattle, but the homeless population is here also. We need to, this is one of the reasons that I, you know, that the Green New Deal provides us a great opportunity for federal investments in small, green-built, subsidized housing so that we can take care of our homeless population and our housing insecure population. Because it's not just homeless, it's people who, you know, are on the edge, you know, facing not being able to pay their rent, particularly in this pandemic crisis. And, you know, that's what I believe our tax money should be spent on rather than weapons of war and incarceration.
Right. So also, given the current climax, current events and stuff, what would you do differently in terms of policing reform and improving your own district when it comes to policing?
Well, I have done some research. I shouldn't say my opposition research team has done some research on police spending. And we were stunned to find out that of the 12 cities in my county, and we are, I believe, the third most populous county in the state. So there's King County where Seattle is, Pierce County where Tacoma is, and then there's us. We're the third largest city in the state with Everett. And we found that $346 million were spent on 12 police forces. And this is not even our county police forces. This is just, you know, our city police forces. That's an obscene amount. We need to cut those military budgets and make sure that those expenditures are going to social services. You know, my own hometown of Marysville is touting that they've got a social worker. Well, out of our, you know, oh, I forget what the number is in terms of the budget, but they've basically hired a single social worker and it's probably a couple of interns. And then they are touting that as, look at what we are doing for social work. We're having social workers work with the police. You know, it's a fraud. We need to slash the budgets. We need to stop buying military grade hardware. You know, Washington State, since Mike Brown was killed in Ferguson in 2014, Washington State has spent over $34 million on military grade hardware. We need to end that program. And we need to make sure that that money is going to, like I said, housing and social supports and not policing. We've got to stop treating things as a criminal issue and putting power in the hands of police.
Right. I 100% agree with that, definitely. So should you win your congressional race, what are some policies, just to point out what your platform is, what are some policies you'd vocalize and advocate for on the House floor?
You know, obviously Medicare for all. The Green New Deal encompasses a wide variety of potential policies. It's a resolution. It's not legislation. One of the things that I would like to promote is a federal waste management program. I don't think with the expenses that are incurred with recycling and general sort of landfill type waste management, I think we've got to get the best science. I think we've got to subsidize through the federal government the best science to take care of our recycling. And if it is a loss for us to do recycling, like a financial loss for us to do recycling, that is one of the reasons we cannot put it in the hands of private companies, because they won't do it effectively. They will do it so that they can profit from it. So those things that are required for the health of our society but are costly, I believe the federal government has to take them over. I would also seek to federalize pharmaceutical companies. There's no reason that pharmaceutical companies should be profiting from the medicine, life-saving medicine that people need. We see what has happened with insulin.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Just as an example, but you know, it's all across the board with these life-saving medicines that people need. And I think people don't realize that the federal government subsidizes a lot of that research anyway, and then hands it over to private companies to do the production and then the profit making. And none of that comes back to the public. So I think that's something that we've got to stop also. I would introduce legislation for that.
Yeah, because, you know, even in Canada, they're where up to like 30 times, if not more, costly than they are for the same vial of insulin and whatnot.
Exactly.
So the privatization and the profiteering is definitely there. So I wanted to ask now, do you have like any other clear closing message for tonight's episode that you'd like to send out about your campaign?
Yes. We are the only progressive in the race. The incumbent has tried to call himself a progressive a number of times. He also speaks as if there will be an inevitable Republican on the ballot against him in the general. That is absolutely not the case. We have an extremely strong campaign. We have a great volunteer base. You know, we're still seeking donations. We're running no corporate cash. You know, everything that we have is volunteer and individually donated. And so we would just ask people to check us out at callforcongress.com. That's F-O-R, not the number four. See my campaign Facebook page, also Call for Congress. Check me out on Twitter, Call for Congress. You'll see exactly where I stand on issues. I'm a fighter. I'm an activist. We need more activists. We need fewer politicians. So I hope people listening out there will check us out and give us some support.
Right. Thank you very much, Jason, for your time. It was a wonderful opportunity to sit and have this interview with you. I wish you the best of luck from Jamaica, New York for your next, for your election. That concludes this interview on PolitiTalk with Tambir. To everyone listening, again, be sure to visit Jason's campaign website, callforcongress.com, and follow him on Twitter at Call for Congress. It'll be in the bio of this episode. Also, follow me on Twitter at It's Tambir C and subscribe to PolitiTalk with Tambir on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Share, give a rating if you'd like. It'd be greatly appreciated. Again, Jason, thank you very much.
Much appreciated. Thank you.
For the given time.
And you have great candidates in New York. I love the New York candidates this year.
Definitely. We have Shania Chaudhary in my own district running against, again, kind of a corporate field incumbent like Larson is, Gregory Meeks. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful slate of progressives in New York, Washington. I know in Washington's 5th district, there's Chris Armitage mm-hmm. as well. So, you know, there's definitely a chance to fix the government, make it work for the people that they seek the votes out from. You know, it's time to have the proper representation rather than giving corporations and big banks the bailouts and leaving the people to just work and beg for scraps. So again, thank you very much. I hope you and your family have a great and safe remaining week. And I hope everyone out there the same as well.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.